Well, the weekend's over, so it's time to chat about it. Got a midget and a Jew, so why don't you sit down and listen to our dope podcast during lunch, dinner, or breakfast. Brad Williams and Adam Ray are here for you any time of the day. So come on and treat yourself right. It's about last night.
Hey guys, Adam Ray here for the About Last Night podcast, and today's a special episode, and a somber one, for sure. Mitzi Shore, the legendary owner, creator of the Comedy Store on Sunset Boulevard, the world-famous comedy store that has created, established, and honed the comedy voices of the likes of Richard Pryor, George Carlin, Jim Carrey, Jay Leno, Howie Mandel, Bob Saget, Roseanne Barr, David Letterman, Dave Chappelle, Chris Rock. I mean, just so many. Robin Williams, Louis Anderson, Ellen DeGeneres, just so many comedians made the Comedy Store their home. And that rings true today. I mean, you think about the amount of people that hang out there and spend time there and that work there. I worked there for 3 years answering phones. And shit, when I was trying to find my way post-college, that became the way people describe it, a home away from home, you know, like a place where you felt safe, you had a community of friends and a purpose. And it definitely took a minute to get that. You know, the Comedy Store is very intimidating, and I hear from young comics all the time, and even older comics that are just new to town that aren't familiar with being around there. They feel like it's, you know, it's got this prestigious aura to it that you want to be a part of. And when you're not, you try to do anything just to be around that energy, you know, and that's what I did. I mean, when I graduated in 2005 and was in this limbo period of not doing stand-up for 2 years, and then in 2007 deciding, all right, I'm going to go away from sketch and improv and really commit to stand-up, the Comedy Store is where I spent all my time and really felt like that was a place that I could hone whatever it was I was trying to hone and figure out, which is, again, one of the huge benefits of the Comedy Store, just the vibe that surrounds that place of being such a safe haven for, you know, comics and artists and just whatever you want to do. I mean, look at the amounts of people like Robin Williams, so different from Arsenio Hall, so different from Sam Kinison, so different from, you know, Whoopi Goldberg, which, by the way, I just read this story that the Belly Room was created by Mitzi because she felt bad that female comics had to follow all these dirty, filthy male comics doing dick jokes. It was Byron Allen, I guess, who was quoted saying that Mitzi said to him, "I need to clean out the attic." And Byron Allen said, "There were rats and roaches." And I was like, "What do you want me to do?" And she said, "All these guy comics are so dirty and filthy, and all they do is a bunch of dick jokes. Not like you, Byron. You're a nice guy. I'm cleaning out the attic and making a nice lounge and putting all my female comics up. They're having a hard time following these guys with their dick jokes. They're coming on stage and having nervous breakdowns." And that's how the Belly Room was formed. Like that 50, 70 seat room that was basically giving a platform to, you know, the rising female voices in comedy. You know, Elaine Boozler, Whoopi Goldberg, Ellen DeGeneres, Sandra Bernhard. Which is just another thing that you're like, God, she just thought outside the box and was just so generous and trying to, you know, put people in a position to succeed, but just giving opportunities, you know, like, obviously I think there's a difference between leading somebody to the promised land and showing them one of the paths, you know, and Mitzi just was just so selfless as far as taking care of people and giving them, you know, a home to try to figure out who they are. And I mean, Jesus, Jay Leno and Dave Letterman being there nightly before they got their respective talk shows. Robin Williams was there I think nights before he booked Mork and Mindy. I think he even showcased for it there. I mean, there's so many of these like stories that are rumored and probably true, because there was one spot for this. You know, Gary Shandling was there all the time. His first spot was at the Comedy Store, which Judd Apatow got footage of and was in the Zen Diaries of Gary Shandling, the HBO series he just came out with, which, you know, highlights so much of his journey at the Comedy Store in Los Angeles, which is pretty amazing. Just, you know, another example of how many people came through and were touched by Mitzi's gifts, you know. I can't help but think too, you know, obviously like the mother of comedy, and it was outside the Comedy Store marquee, which was really sweet. It says, "Good night, our godmother, we will love you forever." Which is so sweet and appropriate, you know, and the Improv and the Laugh Factory also should be recognized, gave tributes, on their marquees to Mitzi, which, you know, is a big deal because, you know, there's obviously so much competition between businesses and comedy clubs, obviously. And for them to step back and be like, you know, she single-handedly was responsible for giving us so much joy and laughter and helping to hone the careers and lives of so many incredible talents that the other clubs got to benefit from, you know. And a lot of these comics did work at other clubs, but they called the Comedy Store their home, you know, and Mitzi was their comedy mom. I can't help but feel deeply empathetic for Pauly too. Pauly Shore, obviously that was his mom, you know, and aside from everything she's done for comics and for the world of comedy, you know, she was a mom. That was Pauly's mom. So I know he's probably grieving the loss of you know, just, and understanding everything she did. I mean, he grew up around Arsenio Hall, Kinison, like Louis Letterman. These guys were like almost like babysitters to Pauly, he says, and like grew up in the comedy clubs, like just being around that so much, which, like, Pauly had an unbelievable run and is still touring and very funny. And like that is on top of, like, she raised a hilarious son, and, you know, he loves her to death, and the way he speaks about her, it's like, you know, for her to be that involved and attentive to all these people who aren't her kids, and then to Pauly as well. And it's just incredible. But, you know, he, at the core of it, he lost his mom, and I think, I hope that's not lost on people that, you know, there's that relationship too in all this. But it's crazy. I mean, I wanted to podcast about it because it was affecting me so much, and I was on a flight, and I just couldn't help but like just think about how a piece of the store, I feel like, obviously is missing now, but is, you know, being held up and honored with so many. I mean, the amount of people that posted honoring Mitzi or with, you know, tweets or quotes or things, you know. Mark Maron said, "Mitzi Shore made an indelible mark on comedy and my brain." I guess she said that Mitzi said to him, "You're a poet. You should wear a scarf on stage." Which, you know, it's so funny that she had such, you know, strong sensibilities and you know, tastes and the things that she would pick out. The first time I showcased for Mitzi, the only time actually I got to, you know, which is, I feel very fortunate that I even got to go up in front of her and get feedback, I believe it was 2010. I was about 3 years in, and she was sitting in the back with the booker at the time, Tommy, and he brought me back over, and he goes, "Mitzi, this is Adam." And he just went up, and I was wearing a backwards hat all the time. You know, it was just a very, I don't know, I thought it fit my style, like conversational, kind of fratty and bro-y, but, you know, other comics had said, you know, "Oh, don't wear the hat" and whatnot, and I was just like, "Yeah, you don't know what you're talking about." And then I get off stage and I go up to Mitzi and I go, "Hey, Mitzi, so nice to meet you. What'd you think?" And she goes, "Why you wear the hat?" And I was like, "Oh, I don't know. I mean, she goes, "You don't know?" And I was like, "Well, I mean, I do. I like it." She goes, "You're better without it." And that was it. And I never, wore a hat on stage in the Comedy Store for a long time after that. Obviously, you know, I think once I felt a little more honed in on who I was and my voice on stage, I felt comfortable to do that. But that resonated hard. I was just like, Jesus, like the way she said it, it carried so much weight. And I could tell she just meant the fuck out of what she was saying. And she said something too. It's like, she still had, you know, she was pretty cognizant and at that time and aware of what she was saying. And Tommy too was good about, you know, filtering, to you, like what she was saying and, you know, kind of translating if it was a shorter piece of advice than you'd hoped for. But man, that was crazy. And just to be around her when she would sit in the back of the OR and watch. And I was there one night when she watched Robin Williams, which was fucking crazy. Cause it's like, you know, she'd watch this guy and his heyday and just coming up and he had popped in to work out. I think this was before his last HBO special. And he was running an hour in the original room and Mitzi's in the back watching and I'm watching her watch him. And that was an intense moment. Cause, you know, you're just like, what is she thinking? Like, what is she? And she was just smiling so big and laughing and just so proud. Just like a proud mom, you know, seeing what Robin Williams had become, obviously, and the response he was eliciting, and which I'm sure was the response he got when he started. You know, apparently that guy just came in like a fucking force to be reckoned with and was just crushing all the time. But it really, I don't know. I just wanted to talk about my experiences and shit, because it made me, as I'm, you know, recounting all my times there in the 11 years that I've been doing stand up, how much time I've spent at the Comedy Store and how much it's done for me, how much it's meant for me, how many ups and downs I've had there. And I wanted to share those because I know that a lot of people have had similar experiences and some people haven't, some people want to, and some people have, you know, not given themselves a chance to be around it and experience some of the great highs and lows that stand-up provides if you stick with it. But I just kind of wanted to share some of those experiences and really, honor Mitzi in recognizing what that place has meant to me and how I just am so grateful for it. I don't know where I'd be without the Comedy Store. And I think a lot of people can attest to that. You know, I straight up don't know where I'd be, you know. Still working at Universal Studios Hollywood, maybe still being fucking fake Wolverine. First time I ever went to the Comedy Store was 2003, my sophomore year of college at USC. I saw Dave Chappelle after the first season of Chappelle's Show, and this was fucking crazy. It was the main room, sold out. We bought tickets like 2 weeks in advance. My buddies and I, Dave Strumpf and Jeremy Silver, we smoked a 5-foot bong and we went there, and I was just like in awe. I mean, I'm walking around the main room, David Schwimmer's there, Pauly was there. I'd never seen Pauly. I was just like starstruck. Jeff Richards was on SNL at the time, starstruck. And we just had amazing seats, and just like the feel of the main room was just so magical, for lack of a better word. And like the lights and the pre-show music and just the chatter of people in the room talking before Chappelle came out. It was like, I remember feeling like, I gotta be here someday. Like I gotta get up on that stage. Like, I gotta figure out a way. And this is, you know, I hadn't even started stand up yet. I'd maybe done a few open mics in Seattle and a few frat parties. So enough to get a taste, but still very scared. Like, I don't have what it takes, or I know what it takes, and I don't have the will to push through and commit to it, you know, for various reasons. But being at that show, I was like, God, this seems unbelievable. Like, to be up there on that stage. And then Chappelle crushes, and we're outside just lingering around on the patio, which is another amazing part of the Comedy Store. It's just to hang, you know, and that's what people don't realize is how much happens before and after the shows between comics and the conversations and relationships and fights and, just the amount of conversations that are had. I mean, like, those walls probably could write a book that would change the course of history. All right, well, that's a pretty bold statement, but it'd be an entertaining book. And then in 2007, when I committed to stand up, I was like, I got to go back there. Like, I remember getting that feeling at the main room, and I know that that's where everyone's at. And the Comedy Store was not what it is now, as far as being as electric and busy and popular, but it was still very prestigious and very, you know, it just, it carried the weight that it always has once it became the Comedy Store, you know, and such a staple of, you know, culture and comedy. And so I was like, I got to go do the open mics there. I got to get up. I just keep hearing from other people I knew that did stand up that this is the toughest room. The original room is the toughest room to do stand up in. So I got to go get on that open mic, and I would sign up and I would get up, and sometimes I wouldn't get up, and sometimes I would get up and then get bumped super late because, you know, when people don't know you, they just, it's just so much of a waiting game and a trying to get that opportunity and then hope you make good on it. And the amount of times that I signed up and got bumped and never went up and waited for 4 or 5 hours, or signed up and went on at the very end after waiting for 4 or 5 hours, having to work the next morning, like 9 a.m., strap on Wolverine claws, but waiting for 4 or 5 hours just to do 3 minutes to four people or less, only to just be so, distraught and depressed, I guess. I mean, just really discouraged because you're like, I waited so long. Like, what am I doing? You know, but I remember waiting that long and being like, I wouldn't have the set that I wanted, and the hosts would comment on that. I remember it was Jeff Dennis and Ryan O'Neill, and they commented on a handful of my open mic sets of just how bad it was and how long I went. I think I ran a light one time, and it was just so like, what am I doing? This is not fun. But then I would go home and it was like, I hated the feeling, and I was like, I gotta fix that and be better, you know? And that's, I guess, when you figure out whether it's for you or not, when you just decide like, this is bullshit. I gotta feel better than this. And I know I can do better. And I would just go, you know, every Sunday and Monday and sign up, and that was just such a crapshoot, you know, and you just hope that the familiarity of your face around there starts to resonate and you start to get on the list more and more, which would happen. And because, you know, Tommy and I think the Comedy Store respected the hustle and the hang, and they wanted you to be around and see that you were putting in the effort on top of getting funnier. And Tommy would slowly start to give me advice and say things to me and, you know my name. And that was really cool. And that did start to make me feel like I was a little more comfortable there, you know. And then I started becoming friends with some of the guys that worked there, Tony Hinchcliffe and Matt Edgar and Jade and Catapretta. And that helps too. Like, of course, like I mentioned earlier, like you just want to feel like you belong and that you know, it's like first day of school. If you don't know anybody, you're going to be just walking around with your head down. But if you can walk in knowing that you see one person and you go, okay, cool, I'm safe here for a few minutes, I can talk to Tony and Matt and we can, you know, and they'll make me feel like I'm supposed to be here, and people will see them talking to me and be like, okay, cool, that guy's, you know, whatever. Even though that doesn't really matter, I think it's everyone's in their own head about, you know, being accepted there more so, but I get it because I have young comic buds now who just are like, I can't go because I don't know anybody. And it's like, yeah, I get that. Like, but you just gotta not act like you've been there before, but just walk with your head up and say hello to people and introduce yourself. You know, that goes a long way too, which I definitely learned from comics that were, had been there and been paid regulars to try to embark advice on me like that, like Brett Ernst and Bobby Lee. They're just like, you know, go say what up. Like, don't just sit in the corner and wait for people to come to you. You think these older comics are going to just come over and be like, hey, are you an open micer? Like, you want to shoot the shit? It's like, no, you got to present yourself. But there's a balance with that because, you know, you don't want to act too arrogant or too self-assured. You know, you want to be humbled or humbling. Wait, humble. That's the word. But yeah, not getting up on those open mics, and I just really want to reiterate the fucking pain and the bummerness of just, you know, not getting up after 4 hours of waiting and questioning everything. You know, the amount of times that I had that, I just really want to stress that is like a real thing and that everybody goes through that and at some point. And it's just how do you bounce back from that? And what do you do about that? You know, because I definitely wanted to quit. And I even convinced myself certain nights. I was like, I'm done. That was it. That was a waste of time. I don't want to waste my time. But then I was like, well, somebody else is going to do it tomorrow and take that spot then, you know, because there's just somebody out there waiting. If you're not going to do the work, somebody else is. And that's what got me back the next day. And And then eventually, you know, you get seen, you get on more open mics. And I remember the first time Jeff Danis and Ryan O'Neill, after months of doing the open mic and being shitty and then making fun of me, which just made me stronger. At first, I was so sensitive to it. I was like, that's so mean. Why would they ever told my mom they made fun of me after my shitty 3 minutes? And she's like, well, be better, you know, which was great advice. And then I remember the first time they complimented me and were like, you know, just keep it going for Adam Ray. You know, yeah, very funny Adam Ray or whatever. And I was like, oh, shit, they didn't make fun of me. They just said my name and said I was funny. And that was a big deal. You know, that was a big fucking deal. That was almost like being passed at the Comedy Store. I swear to God, like, that was such an accepting moment of, oh, I got better, you know, and these guys that are respected here and are paid regulars and run the open mic, like, they basically just said, I'm funny. And that meant so much. And then I started to come around more, just being friends with more of the comics that worked there. And then, one night I was in the Belly Room doing a bringer show. That's the other thing too. I went to USC for college and then in the acting classes and improv classes. And I worked at Universal Studios. So I had so many groups of friends to bring out to shows. And the bringer shows, obviously, that I did a lot through Vargas Mason and Kathy Lewis, where you bring, you know, 10 to 15, 20 people, and you get to go up. And they would give me a good spot and make money off my friends and give me time. And I got to do non-open mics and get a taste of what a real show was like. And that was super imperative, just to get a bite of the what it could be. And Bobby Lee was on a show one night, and he saw me and said it was good. How come I've never seen you? I'm like, well, I'm not here as much as I should be. And he's like, if I brought you downstairs to Tommy right now, could you follow me in the original room and crush for 20 minutes? And I was like, yeah, duh. I definitely could not. I probably could have done 8 minutes. Great. I would have been so nervous, but you have to think you can. In that moment, I was like, yeah, of course. Like say that you can. Like, don't be like, I'm not ready, which, you know, I don't know what the move there is. You know, I think I trusted my instincts because I said yes. And then Bobby took me downstairs and brought me right to Tommy. He said, Tommy, let this guy go up next. And Tommy was like, yeah, I've seen Adam. He's around every now and then. It's good. You got to be around more, though. You know, I'd see you on Sundays and Mondays. You got to hang out more, though. You got to put in more of the time. And Bobby was like, put him up right after me for 15 minutes. And Tommy was like, no, you know what? Just be around. I'll get you some more spots. I'll get you, just start coming in on this day. And instead of signing up, now Tommy would just put me up, you know? So instead of just signing up and waiting and maybe not getting up, now I was like officially going up because Bobby did that. So because I said, yeah, I can do it, Bobby took me down there, got me in with Tommy a little bit more, just kind of put his stamp of approval on me. And even though he wasn't going to put me up right there, which would have been crazy, it gave me a little bit more of an in. And now I didn't have to, I could call in and I definitely go up Sunday and Monday instead of having to sign up and maybe not go up. And so that was huge. So I'm glad that I told Bobby I could do it, because if I said, no, I'm not ready, that would have been the end of that. And he wouldn't have brought me downstairs, you know? So I guess that worked out. And then I started working there. And then Tommy suggested, if you want to be around more, start working. You know, you call in for Belly Room spots on Friday. You can go to La Jolla, which I did the La Jolla Comedy Store for the first time with Dub Davidoff and Chris D'Elia and Brian Callen, which was crazy. So fun. And you just get to call in, you get more opportunities, you know? Being just around you know. And so I did the phones, answered the phones on Fridays for about 4 or 5 hours and would hit people up with their avails and make the schedules, print them up and answer just phones for any sort of inquiry about the club. And that was great. It was a cool way to get to know more of the comics when they would call in. Sometimes I'd just have a 30-minute chat with Steve Byrne or Dave Attell would call in, and Mitzi would call in sometimes and talk to her, which was crazy. And it just made me feel a part of things more. It just made me feel like, oh, this place is now. I'm like really, now I'm contributing. I'm not just taking. You know, I'm giving to this place, and I feel it just made it feel sweeter to get something out of it and to get, you know, and it made me too just more appreciative of the spots that I would get even at the Belly Room Friday. I'd know that I put in time and it made me want to hang out more because I was around there more, and I was like, I want to have a home. I think everybody, you know. It's, you know, think about middle school or high school. You just want to have a clique. You want to have some sort of a group to be attached to and in any work environment and as an adult. And so I just wanted to be there as much as I could and be a part of it and have it be as comfortable as it could be. And if I came into town and wanted to bring my parents by, I could bring them in and they could get a free drink or they could get just sit down in the back with me and not have to, you know, and people would say, hey, you know, you're Adam's mom, you know, and just get that type of an experience. That was really important to me. And and just knowing what that place had done, you know, I think you have a vague idea of what the Comedy Store is and what it's done for comedy and what Mitzi's created. And then once you really get there and you're around it, you know, and my buddy Sandy Danto worked for Pauly and opened for him and would work in the video room. And so I'd be doing phones and I'd go downstairs and Sandy would be in the video room editing so many clips, which I think they're now starting to post on their Instagram page. And Sandy would be going through all this footage and we'd just sit there and watch all these old tapes of all these old comics and old sets at the Comedy Store. And it was fucking insane. And you're just like, oh my God, this happened here. Like, what are we doing? And now we're kind of a part of this, you know? And then you see all the names on the wall and it just drives you even harder. You're like, I just want, like, that's the, you know, you put it up on a pedestal. You're like, that's the be all end all, which I want to encourage people to not look at it like that. Getting your name on the wall at the Comedy Store, yeah, that's an insane honor. And the names that we're up there with is crazy. But, you know, it's everything in the middle. It's everything that leads up to that or past that. And also your name on the wall doesn't define what your comedy career is going to be. And that's one of the things the Comedy Store has taught me, not just from the conversations and advice I've gotten from, you know, Bobby Lee or Sebastian Maniscalco or Mark Maron. Whitney Cummings has given me great advice over the years. You know, it's you have to go through it. The Comedy Store, there's no better blueprint for here's this place to figure it out and to try and to, you know, there's no rule book for this shit. The stage is yours to... You know, Jim Carrey used to say, I used to go up on stage with no material and Mitzi would say, I don't understand what you're doing, but go ahead. And then he said about a third of the stuff I came up with was great and the poor audience had to sit through the other two thirds. And that's just what, to me, again, I don't want to generalize and say this for everybody, but stand up and comedy, it's like you have to try and fail to figure out what it is you like, what the audience likes about you, and finding that balance and that blend, and then just trying to, you know, explore it to heights and avenues that and push yourself. You know, I think that's why it is so great. It's why you see guys doing stand up and Don Rickles doing it into his 90s, because there's no end point where you just go, I figured it out. I got as good as I could possibly be. And that's why you see Chappelle and Chris Rock and even Shandling towards the end of his life going up at the Store and still trying to just work on the craft of their jokes and get those reps in, you know, because you can't replace the work. That's why it's one of the most just professions in the world. You can't replace the getting up and the give and take of the live audience. You can't just sit at home and write. You got to get out there. And that's why, again, I have young comic friends and some that are even about my age that are just not, you know, and it's fine, not willing to put in that extra oomph, that extra like fire, and you know, whether it's inside you, some people have it inside them and they just are, they whether it's making excuses or liking their life a certain way, that's fine. But it's like, you know, the Comedy Store isn't to fuck around, you know, like you come there, you're putting in work, like there's, you're around so many energies and so much, so many amazing talents and minds that are trying to like, work on shit. It's really, if you can be around that, and I think that's why a lot of people do like being around it so much. Like there's an invigorating force of creativity that rubs off on you, you know. Even in the back of the there's the back bar. Like I've spent hours back there just hanging out, having amazing comedy conversations, and then also getting really fucked up, smoking a joint with Dave Chappelle, but just picking people's brains and just living and breathing comedy. And And it's always fun, and it's always, I've never left the Comedy Store bummed out. You know what I'm saying? Like even in those early days and even in the first few days when I got passed as a paid regular, which was a huge deal for me. Because again, all those hours of signing up and not getting up or driving home and feeling shitty or getting made fun of by other comics that host the open mic or working the phones and not getting, and thinking I was further along than I was. That every young comic goes through that, wanting to be further along, wanting to be better than you are and thinking you're better. And you got to have that delusional confidence and to think that you're, you know, worth it and to keep pressing on. But, you know, I think at some point it is good to step back and be like, all right, let me just enjoy the process of getting better, which is what Brett Ernst told me. He's like, write, get funny. Things are going to happen when they're supposed to happen. And I think acknowledging that so that you can take some of the pressure off yourself and have fun and have fun conversations late night in the parking lot and smoke a J and and pick the brain of Joe Rogan and Duncan Trussell and Ari Shaffir and not feel like you have to walk away from that being best friends with them, you know? But having those nights when I was so bummed and then to get past was a huge, huge deal. And it was a big win. But it wasn't like, I didn't think, like, here we go, now it's all over. You know, now I just start getting great spots at 10:15. I start following, you know, Sebastian going up before Chris D'Elia, and Jeff Ross follows me. You know, it's like nothing changes by one thing. You just, you know, for me, I think it's you just keep stacking the chips and you just keep getting as good and keep preparing yourself for that next big opportunity. That's all you're doing by putting in all the work. Constantly preparing yourself for the next big moment, you know. And whether it's a big moment or not, it's, you know, that's defined by, you know, sometimes outside, you know, aspects of the business. But always being prepped, always being ready. You know what I'm saying? I feel like that's what you can control. And I'm a big proponent of controlling what you can control. And, but getting my name on the wall was huge. And I remember I definitely got choked up because you think about all the hard work you put in. And what it took and how I was so, you know, 1 foot in, 1 foot out with stand up, and had a long distance girlfriend, and didn't want to do it because of that. I didn't want to ruin that. I knew I was sacrificing relationships and friendships. I missed out on a lot of birthday parties and just random nights of friends from college and acting class and work and just people that want to hang, because I was like, once I committed, I got to, you know, I would miss a birthday party because I would stay at the Comedy Store and waiting to get up. And then I remember not even getting up and then not going to the party and being like, Jesus, I didn't get either one of these tonight. And telling my buddy, he was like, did you get up? And I was like, no. He's like, well, then why? He's like, what are you doing? And I was like, I don't know, but I got to do this. Like this, this is the right, like, and then just convincing myself, like, these are the steps, you know, it takes this. I have to get through the bullshit. There's going to be ups and downs and highs and lows. But finding that balance, you know, and having a great hang, you know, because you have to enjoy what you're doing. And if it's all work and business, then why are you doing it? You know, it's got to be fun. Got to look forward to going to work. And I did once I got past, because now I got paid original room. I was on the schedule, you know, and I was on these lineups that were dope. And I could go early and watch all these people and just get a comedy class and watch these greats and learn. You know, you do watch from learning. I definitely believe in that. You know, I know some people don't like to because they don't like to get influenced or soak up, you know, but we're all influenced by something and somebody. Everybody comes from somebody else. We're all just, you know, it's just how it is. You look at anybody you love, they pulled from somebody else that they loved. They stole little things of, not material, but like stole, you know, mannerisms or whatever. Like we're all, you know, you mimic who you love when you start out too. And a piece of that stays in you. And then you just end up finding, you know, your voice through that. But it was awesome to be on those lineups and late. I would get late spots for the first handful of years as a paid regular, 12:30 and on to 1:30, to even 1:45. And it was fun. At first, I was so pumped just to be on those lineups and to work out. And then again, after a while, I'd say a year or two of that, I was just like, all right, like maybe I could get an 11:45 or a 12, you know? And then I remember when I got in casting the movie The Heat, and that became a number one comedy over the summer, people were telling me, dude, you got to get like an 11 or 11:15. You're in the number one movie. You're in it, you know? And I'd start to buy into that hype a little bit. Like, yeah, fucking, I should get some better spots. But I never said anything to Tommy. And somebody said, you got to complain to him. You got to get in his ear. He doesn't know. He doesn't listen. He responds to that. I'm like, that's not my style. And I don't want to do that. I don't want to bark at somebody to get something. Like, I mean, again, like there's a difference between being proactive and being an asshole. And I think letting things happen organically and not, but I just was like, if these are the spots I'm getting, I'm supposed to get these for a reason. 12:45 and up. And that's when I would start fucking around with Jeff Scott and doing the music stuff. And that's where I found that as like an outlet and being like, all right, I'm going to use these late night spots for me. You know, and that's what Tommy would say. He's like, play, like figure this out. People have seen 12 comics. Maybe they don't want to see just more jokes. And then I started bringing in costumes and doing like weird characters. I used to bring this goatee and this cowboy hat and this leather jacket and these tinted sunglasses. And I would just tell old stories from the road as if I was like this old rock star roadie and just improvise stories for like 8 to 10 people. And then Jeff Scott and I started doing the music thing, and that became my thing. You know, nobody was doing that, and it was cool. And then Tommy would give me some early spots every now and then with that, and just get to, you know, crush with it in front of a bigger audience that wasn't, you know, tired from being there all night. And that type of exploratory attitude was like, oh yeah, that's what this place is about. You know, that's why Tom used to say, Mitzi said it was an artist colony, you know, and you use that stage for what it is you're trying to do and say. And, which, you know, was Mitzi's plan with the whole thing. Also, think of all the shows that have created, careers and just more life at the store because of this, you know, artist colony mentality, you know, the roast battle and Kill Tony and the dance, competition show, live podcasts, and because of that too, the amount of people that are just coming to the Comedy Store, like I've met 4 out of my 5 comedy heroes at the Comedy Store. Isn't that fucking bonkers? Jim Carrey, which I've told on the podcast before, where he walked through, he was scouting talent for I'm Dying Up Here, and walked through the back bar and looked at me and goes, hey. And I was like, hey. which is exactly what I wanted to say. Also saw Adam Sandler at the Main Room for the first time, just being around him. Again, saw Robin Williams at the OR when he was working out for his HBO special. And I told that Larry David story of him coming to the store to work out his SNL monologue and getting to hang with him and show him around the club. He hadn't been there in 37 years. And sitting in the back of the original room and him watching comics and being like, wow, I haven't been here in 37 years. I'm like, has anything changed? He's like, not really. No, pretty much all the same. And then walking him to the OR, or I'm sorry, the Main Room, and Pete Davidson had brought him to the store, and he was trying to decide whether or not to go up and just standing on the side watching. And then he was just like, I'm good. I'm not going to go up. This is too much. I was like, come on. He's like, nah, it's fucking, why would I go up? It's too much. He's like, I get stressed out. But just the fact that that happened and it was there, you know, and it's, and the timing, you know, me being there and performing and Larry choosing that to be the place that he goes up because he'd been there back in the day and, you know, 37 years ago. And he was like, this feels comfortable. I haven't been there in 37 years. Jim Carrey, when he went, hadn't been there in 20 some years, but they go back because there's just this familiarity and you know, comedy, communion vibe that Mitzi created that makes people want to be there. You know, Eddie Murphy is always coming through to see shows sporadically, you know, everyone always hoping that he's going to go up, which I've heard Neil Brennan talk about how every time he hangs out at his house, him and Chappelle are pushing him to do it. And he's just like, man, I have 25 years of material to sift through. Like, it's just overwhelming, but who knows, you know? And if he did do it, it probably would be at the Comedy Store. The people too that I've met at the Comedy Store, you know, Brian McKnight, Gene Simmons, John Mayer, the aforementioned comedy heroes of mine, Nelly last week, sat next to Nelly after I got off stage and he pat me on the shoulder and goes, hilarious, man. And I just did a double take cause I saw it was him. And then I looked right at him and went, Nelly. And he was like, yeah, that's me. Fucking just saying his name to his face, screaming it. That's what I wanted to do. But again, it's just that unexpected. You never know what's going to happen. You know, there's a rawness to the Comedy Store too. When you walk around, obviously they've refurbished a lot of stuff and cleaned it up, and with the staff and the way the parking is now and the patio and security, it's become a more professional establishment, but it hasn't gotten, you know, hasn't become corporate, you know, it's still what Mitzi intended it to be. And you see that when you just walk up and down the hallways and you're in the room and you see the lights and that's never going to change. And I'm sure she would love to know that. And I'm sure she does know that, you know, Polly's going to, you know, is doing a great job of just keeping everything that she created alive. And it's great that he's been around it so much to be a part of it this much and to care about it this much and to care about her this much and to care about comedy, you know, the way he does. And, you know, it's been his life on stage and off. And so I think we're in good hands. But anyway, those are just my thoughts. I wanted to share some Comedy Store experiences. You know, this is just a a really sad day, and not the end of comedy, but definitely the end of an amazing life that changed the game. I mean, there's just no other way to say it. Like, she is single-handedly responsible for so many laughs, millions of laughs for decades, and that is fucking bonkers to think about. You know, there's probably even people that we don't even know that have performed at the comedy. You know, Care Top has probably been at the Comedy Store. You know, Rita Rudner, Sinbad's been there. Fucking, you know, who knows? Maybe Hillary Clinton's been there. Probably not, but who knows? But probably not. All right. Thanks for listening. Mitzi, rest in peace. I love you. Thank you for everything you've done, and thank you for the opportunities. And thanks for making comedy so cool. We're back on next week, Monday, with a brand new episode. So stay tuned. Have a good weekend.